This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Sword and Laser Podcast, episode number 80. Nice 80. Round number, huh? Nice. It is also Halloween. I'm Tom Merritt. I mean, no.
No, you're not. You're drunk.
I am not drunk. I'm Veronica Belmont.
I'm not drunk. I'm Veronica Belmont.
I had a couple of glasses of wine. Are you going to embarrass me on my podcast?
Are you embarrassed?
No.
There's nothing wrong with having a couple of glasses of wine.
It was a long day.
It was a long weekend.
But anyway, this is a show, in case you've never listened to it before, welcome. It's a podcast about science fiction and fantasy books that we enjoy. We talk about the latest news in the genre world, and we discuss what we're reading over in the forums at goodreads.com.
Is that what we are? Are we a genre podcast?
I believe we are. Were we to ever win some kind of award, that would probably be the category we were in.
And that is exactly what people call sci-fi fantasy stuff now, is genre. Although I get a little weirded out by that, because like romance is still genre.
And
it's
horror.
It's a genre.
Horror fits into that as well.
Yeah, but sci-fi fantasy seems to be hogging the term.
Yes, indeed.
So we apologize to the other genres for that.
Well, happy Halloween. I wish some of you were sharing your costumes over in Goodreads. I'd love to see what people were being for trick-or-treating this year.
I am dressed up as a mad scientist.
Really?
Yeah.
You had a costume?
Lab coat, stethoscope.
Nice.
No big.
I didn't do any kind of costume this year.
You dressed up as Veronica Belmont.
I dressed up as slightly intoxicated Veronica Belmont.
See, now I wasn't going to go there.
Great costume. Yes, you were thinking it. Don't lie to me.
You read my mind.
I know how your brain works, Merritt. Anyway, so happy Halloween, and let's get right to the quick burns.
Wired is always good for a list, and Marty Cortinas has the greatest geek books of all time. According to the readers of Wired, they revealed their own ultimate reading book list, 9 essential geek books you must read right now. And then they had a poll. And would you look at that? Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert Heinlein made the cut.
Mm-hmm. Also,
it was the first one.
Also, Brave New World. And we've got 1984. And Dune, A Brief History of Time.
Surely you're joking. Mr. Feynman made it. But of course, this is the greatest geek book. So they don't have to be sci-fi and fantasy fiction.
Right. Cosmos by Carl Sagan. What else we got here?
Brief History of Time. Did you just say that?
I did. I, Robot by Isaac Asimov.
There we go. There's a sci-fi.
And then the last one I don't think I mentioned yet was Philip K. Dick, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Thank you.
So very, very good books. All very good books. Great photos, too. I liked how they did this slideshow. Although normally slideshows drive me crazy.
We need to do, we've got a damn fine group of people over there in the Goodreads forum. We should do our greatest sci-fi fantasy books of all time poll.
We've done that.
Yeah, I know. But we should make like a big push and like put out a press release and, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Maybe this spring, maybe sometime soon.
All right.
That sounds like a good idea.
I like it.
And speaking of winners, SF Signal has their list of the 2011 World Fantasy Awards and Lifetime Achievement winners. And so their list goes Best Novel, Who Fears Death? Best Novella, The Maiden Flight of Macaulay's Bella Ruffin. I don't know what that means. Best short fiction, Fossil Figures. Best
Joyce Carol Oates, Fossil Figures. Interesting.
Yeah. Best anthology, My Mother, She Killed Me, My Father, He Ate Me by Kate Bernheimer. Best collection, What I Didn't See and Other Stories by Karen Joy Fowler. Best artist, Kinuku Y. Kraft. Special award professional to Mark Gascion for Angry Robot, and special award non-professional for Elisa Krasnstein for 12th Planet Press.
Congratulations to all the winners.
Very exciting. Great, great site over there at SF Signal.
Let's check what's on the calendar.
All right, I have to open it. I forgot to open it.
It's easier to see what's on the calendar when you open it.
All right, so on November 8th, we have The Alloy of Law, a Mistborn novel by Brandon Sanderson, which I believe we've talked about before. We've got Stands a Shadow by Call Buchanan, the sequel to Farlander, one of 2010's more enjoyable fantasy debuts. And then we have Endurance by Jay Lake. In Endurance, Jay Lake's fierce kick-ass heroine from the eponymous Green returns to Copper Downs. She's left after rebelling against her training as a courtesan, killing the immortal Duke, and generally wreaking havoc. But now the gods need her protection from a divinity-destroying bunch of magicians.
Those divinity-destroying magicians.
They'll get you every time.
November 22nd, Micro by Michael Crichton and Richard Preston comes out. This is certainly on the edge of our genre fiction. Three men are found dead in the locked second-floor office of a Honolulu building with no sign of struggle except for the ultra-fine razor-sharp cuts covering their bodies.
Ooh.
The only clue left behind is a tiny-bladed robot. That's its entree into our podcast right there. It sounded just only like mystery up until then. Nearly invisible to the human eye, Micro pits nature against technology in vintage Crichton fashion, completed by visionary science writer Richard Preston. Of course, Michael Crichton passed on. This boundary-pushing thriller melds scientific fact with pulse-pounding fiction to create yet another masterpiece of sophisticated, cutting-edge entertainment. So where Neal Stephenson kind of comes from the sci-fi realm, cyberpunk realm, and in ReamD, a lot of people on Goodreads have been pointing out, like, this is really just a thriller.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sure it's really sci-fi. Michael Crichton, in this posthumous book, coming from the other end, coming from pure thriller land, right? That's mm-hmm. what he writes. And then kind of bleeding over and meeting Stevenson in the middle in some sort of cyber thriller land that they've created together.
Very cool. And then the next day, on November 23rd, we have Theft of Swords. They killed the king. They pinned it on two men. They chose poorly. This comes from Michael J. Sullivan. Royce Melbourne, a skilled thief, and his mercenary partner, Hadrian Blackwater, make a profitable living carrying out dangerous assignments for conspiring nobles until they're hired to pilfer a famed sword. What appears to be just a simple job finds them framed for murder of the king and trapped in a conspiracy that uncovers a plot far greater than the mere overthrow of a tiny kingdom.
Now, as the keeper of the Sword and Laser calendar, I have to say, io9, Wartzone, some of these sources I use to find out what cool stuff's coming out, they've been dropping the ball. io9
really?
Like put out their October edition of what books to read like the last week of October.
Yeah, it was super late. I saw some comments on that post too.
Wartzone hasn't put out like a big roundup since the end of last year. And so, you know, well, it's all right. I can't just surf on their backs. So I've been searching around looking for all kinds of different sources to find good stuff. And it's hard. It's difficult. Even the freaking publisher sites don't make it easy to find out when their darn books are coming out. So thankfully, Sean has come to our aid with some suggestions.
15 November, 10 billion days and 100 billion nights by Ryu Matsusa. 10 billion days, that is how long it will take the philosopher Plato to determine the true systems of the world. 100 billion nights, that is how far into the future he and Christ and Siddhartha Gautama will travel into the future to witness the end of the world and also its fiery birth. Named the greatest Japanese science fiction novel of all time, 10 billion days and 100 billion nights is an epic eons in the making. 13 December, Spice and Wolf, Volume 5 by Asuna Hasakura. The life of a traveling merchant is a lonely one, a fact with which Kraft Lawrence is well acquainted. Wandering from town to town with just his horse, cart, and whatever wares have come his way, the peddler is pretty well settled into his routine. That is, until the night Kraft Lawrence finds a wolf goddess asleep in his cart. Taking the form of a fetching girl with wolf ears and tail, Holo has wearied of tending to the harvest in the countryside, and strikes up a bargain with the merchant to lend him the cunning of Holo the Wise Wolf, to increase his profits in exchange for taking her along on his travels. What kind of businessman could turn down such an offer? Lawrence soon learns, however, that having an ancient goddess as a traveling companion can be a bit of a mixed blessing. Will Wolf Girl turn out to be too wild to tame? 24 January, Book Girl and the Corrupted Angel by Mizuki Nomura. With college exams approaching, Toko Amano, president of the literary club, closet book-eating goblin, and shameless procrastinator, does the unthinkable and declares club activity suspended. Unencumbered by the demands of his taskmistress to deliver handwritten improv stories, Konoha finds himself helping his oft-estranged classmate Nanase Kotobuki in the music room after school. When one of Kotobuki's friends goes missing before Christmas, though, vanishing amidst rumors of her being an angel of music, Konoha himself is swept up in the mystery unfolding as if from the pages of Gaston Leroux's seminal work.
Awesome. He's right. He wrote in his email that I would probably butcher most of those Japanese names. So I'm glad he came to my rescue.
Thank you, Sean.
You know, I'm actually not bad at pronouncing Japanese names and Japanese things, so I think I could have handled it. I'm just saying.
Now you're not backing down from the challenge.
No, but I really appreciate it. That's great. I hope hopefully more people will send in stuff like that in the future of stuff that they think is interesting that's coming
out. Right, because it's easy to find like bulk lists of just crap that's coming out. Mm-hmm. It's hard to find like, okay, if I don't already know the author, what stuff's good out there? One note here. He said Spice and Wolf Novel 5 coming out December 13th. I could only confirm the manga of Spice and Wolf, which is already out. It came out October 25th. The Amazon search would not give me the novel, even though he has a direct link to it. So I thought that was kind of weird. I haven't added that one to the official Sword and Laser calendar until I track that down for sure. The other two was able to confirm, and they're on the Sword and Laser calendar now, thanks to Sean.
Well, thank you very much, Sean. That was awesome. Let's stop down for a quick break from our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. The internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles, and in fact, I think it's up to 100,000 titles, across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. And one audiobook that you might want to consider is 1Q84 by Haruki Murakami.
Oh yeah, that's been on our calendar. You should have known it was coming.
It has, and it's now out in Audible form. And you can get it for free if you head over to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword. Yes, it is.
If you're sitting there thinking, Tom, Veronica, I have been an Audible subscriber since the early days of Sword and Laser. How can I show my appreciation for Audible? There's two ways. One, just go on Twitter and at Audible and at Sword and Laser and just say, hey, been a long time customer, just want you to know. The other thing you can do is pass along that URL to somebody who isn't on Audible. Say, hey, you want a free audiobook? Want to try it out? audiblepodcast.com/sword. It'll work for anyone. So there you go.
Yeah, and also there's some bonus audio in this. Audible interviews the translators of 1Q84, Jay Rubin and Philip Gabriel. So you get a little bonus Audible stuff in there when you download
stuff
this
you
one.
Don't get in the print version sometimes. Mm-hmm. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, my good friend Megan is reading it right now, and she loves it. And I have to say, I held the book in my hand, and it has the softest pages of any book I think I've ever felt. I don't know how to explain it. Like the pages.
Are you hitting on that book?
I was like, ooh, yeah.
Softest pages.
Your pages are just so soft. No, it is kind of weird.
How do you do it, 1Q84?
Maybe I'm just not used to holding an actual book in my hand anymore because it's been a really long time.
Really?
but it's a really nice book. So if you want to listen to it in Audible form or if you want to actually buy the book or download it on Kindle, highly recommend it. It's going to be my next big read, I think.
Excellent.
All right, well, let's head into Barrier Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. We've got a thread started about Ready Player One. This one comes from Eric. He says, so after reading Ready Player One, I was thinking of some of the things I've read about things like the holodeck signaling the fall of mankind. This seems likely to me. If you could get the same stimuli from home as you could from going out, why go out? Lonely? Program a virtual dream girlfriend or boyfriend. Maybe the Oasis wasn't quite to that point, but you could definitely see it heading there. What does everyone else think? Would civilization have a chance if something like Oasis or the holodeck started?
Great, great question and great conversation to follow. Lots of people expressing their opinions on the various reasons you might want to leave the house anyway. I always think, well, how are you paying for your simulation? How are you making your money? How are you feeding yourself? How are you maintaining your home? those are always motivations that are going to get you to do something, unless you've got an illness of some sort, in which case you're addicted to the holodeck. And that's a whole different question. It could get us all addicted, right? But if you're not addicted, if you're just saying, well, there wouldn't be any motivation to go meet people, you'd probably still leave the house.
Did you just invent the term holodicted?
Did I accidentally say that?
You did.
I did. Did I mean to say that? Yes, I did.
Yes, yes.
That was just total accident. But yeah, we become holodicted. Because there are people who get addicted to things like WoW right now. Mm-hmm. And that's a different thing. Maybe illness is a little harsh, but it's an addiction sort of thing. But then there are also people who play lots of WoW and do social networks and can get a lot of stimulus from the computer, but they still have to go outside. And sometimes you want to, you know. I think it's a trope that isn't exactly true, that if we are given everything virtually, we won't ever want to meet in real life. And I think Ready Player One kind of deals with that, mm-hmm. when he wants to meet in real life, even though he's got this rich, beautiful relationship in the game, and he risks losing that by meeting in real life. We still have this impulse that's like, yeah, but I want to really feel it. Even if it's like a completely realistic virtual world, I think part of us would know, like, but it's not real. It's the same thing that says, okay, this is a first edition book and this isn't. They're identical. You could call one a first edition and we'd never know, but the idea that that's the first edition has weight for people. And I think the idea of like, well, this is real, would have weight for people still.
And I also think that this could be anything. I mean, you could talk about virtual reality and say that people are getting addicted to it, but it's just the next level of what people are already doing, kind of like how you mentioned. It's just the next thing. It's not necessarily any more people that are getting addicted to this virtual reality scenario. It's just that the people who have a propensity to already be addicted to this type of thing would just be moving into that arena. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And Terp Kristen, I think, had a good point when she said, I think for a virtual world to consume civilization, it would have to provide something better than reality, mm-hmm. and would have to do it for the masses. And I think that's that addiction.
Well, should we assume that the Oasis is better than reality? I mean, we don't really know what it is like in a virtual world sense. I mean, maybe the Oasis is better than reality. Apparently, by their description, it appears almost lifelike, reality-like. So that might be enough to go back on what I said earlier a little bit. Yeah. It might be enough to get more people addicted, because maybe it is so similar to real life that it's almost, you know, you can't tell the difference.
And it's better than the real life of the people who live in the stacks.
Right. I mean, that has to do with the time and place that this kind of technology grows up in. I mean, this is obviously happening in a very almost dystopian world where the real life just kind of sucks at this point. There's not a lot of enjoyment to be had from leaving your apartment or leaving your tiny little trailer and venturing out into the real world where life is shit. You don't have any money. You don't have, like, you know, beautiful outside world to roam around in and kind of feel connected to the world with. It's just kind of a shithole.
I think it's easy to undervalue the human impulse to connect in real life. And I still think no matter how good that virtual world is, you're still going to want to meet the friends you make there. It's going to be like, let's take it to the next step. Let's meet in real life.
Do you think
see that
so?
All the time on the current internet? People get to a point in a relationship online and they say, well, I want to meet for real. And I think that will always be. There will always be this sort part of us that's like, no, but I want to have that honest connection.
I kind of agree with you, but I also kind of disagree with you, because I feel like the further we get into internet culture, the more it's becoming the norm to just have friends who are online and have those friends be just as real and just as affecting to your day-to-day life as someone you would know in the real world.
Definitely.
I think relationships have evolved now where
exactly,
you can have
but
a
that's
real
only,
relationship.
But even then, those people, when they meet in real life, get really excited. Because they're meeting in real life. It's like, oh my gosh, this is an extra great thing. Not that the relationship was bad before. I think you're absolutely right. There are new relationships being forged that mean you don't have to meet in real life. But I think there's always going to be that impulse to want to.
Like us, for example. We've never met in real life.
I have no idea who you are.
And we've been friends all these years. Yes. It just goes to show you can build friendship.
You joke, but Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur host a show together on the Twit Network. They've never met.
Really?
Not in real life, no.
I had no idea. That is that is very interesting.
And in fact, we had this big party and everybody was supposed to come out and that was going to be the first time they met in person. Amber couldn't make it.
Oh, man. So I would love to think, well, unfortunately, I've met
them
both.
Sarah.
Well, not unfortunately that I've met them both, but I mean, it would be fun to pretend that one of them didn't really exist.
Yeah.
That they were like a fake person, but I've met them
Or they're both the same person.
Or they're the same person.
Oh. They're not the same person.
Well, moving on to the next thread, we had one started by John in the Ready Player One group, discussion group.
And we are wrapping up Ready Player One this week, so that's appropriate.
Mm-hmm. And he brings up IROC. Do you remember IROC? He was the character that came into H's little clubhouse.
Oh,
and was kind of
right.
A pain in the ass.
The jerk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And John goes on to say, I finished the book a while back, but something has been bugging me about IROC. I kept expecting him to show up later in the book, maybe as a Sixer agent or a spy, but he just sort of faded out after the first key. I thought that had to be him in the first meeting of the high five that knocked over the magazine. I figured he had access to the room and maybe the Sixers had given him an artifact that granted invisibility or something like that. And, on the other hand, I thought if he was just going to be a throwaway character, he was overdeveloped. I mean, there wasn't many other characters that just dropped out of the story without first being killed, like, you know, spoilers, I guess, we're wrapping up the book, like Wade's
Spoiler
aunt.
Alert.
Yeah. Like Wade's aunt. So, any other opinions? And
I like that he didn't come back. I would have rolled my eyes and sighed if he had come back because it would have been like, oh, so we have to meet everyone we've ever met. I like it in books when you meet a developed character and you get to know them a little bit and then you never meet them again because that happens. That happens in real life and it adds depth to the book. And I thought that IROC was a good example of that, where it just gave us an illustration of what different people in the Oasis are like. This is a character type. He wasn't very well developed. He was, frankly, a little shallow, but he was developed enough that we're like, okay, that's an example of what else is out there. And now I get that. And if he had shown up again in some coincidental fashion later, I just feel like that would have been too much.
So you must fall into the camp of thinking that perhaps he was overdeveloped for being a throwaway character.
No, actually, I don't. I like that he was developed enough so I got to know a character type. It lent me an understanding of what the Oasis was like because there were characters like IROC in there. And I'm like, oh, okay, I get that. I get that there's a lot of pretentious folks out there trying to, you know, be the guys that are finding all this stuff, but they really don't have the skills. They're just kind of doing it for fashion. And he was just an exemplar of that.
I expected him to come back in some way. They did kind of build him up a little bit. I mean, they really kind of talked about who he was and why they were so irritated to have him around. And then to just never bring him back, I mean, they didn't really do that with any other character that they didn't kill. So it just seemed weird that he did have that little mini arc and then just kind of went away. I mean, he came back briefly because he was talking about how Wade and H knew each other. Like he kind of spilled the beans on that in the forums during the competition. But that was really the only time we really got to see him again or hear about him again. So I thought it was a little weird. I tend to agree with John on this one, personally.
Yeah, I think I would have. You know, it felt like the kind of character that's built up and then is going to do something bad. And I would have hated that. I would have been like, ugh, it's so obvious. I don't want that. And so I was glad that he didn't come
back. Well, maybe he could have come back as a good character. Maybe he could have tried to find his fame and fortune in, you know, the decent way. Jared agrees with me.
I just don't think every character that's introduced with some amount of depth has to be forced back into the story.
Isn't that the point of introducing characters?
Sometimes, but it just becomes a little predictable. This keeps you on your toes. You're like, oh, okay, it's not all going to work out exactly the way I think.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to work out exactly the way you think, but it is kind of a waste of time to introduce a character and then not do anything with them.
It's not a waste of time to me because we actually got a little more information about what Oasis is like because there's characters like IROC out there. It was to me, it's depth to the universe.
Well, I'm just going to make a NaNoWriMo book where all I do is introduce characters.
And you're going to tie them all in at the end.
No, and then nothing happens.
Oh,
with
and then
them.
None of them ever come back?
All I do is just invent.
One character introduction after another.
Invent new characters. It'll be awesome. And it will be your favorite book ever.
I will love it because I will never see it coming, except now you told me. Great. Spoiler.
Sorry. Maybe next NaNoWriMo.
Hey, it's All Hallows Read.
Yes. This, Jenny, according to Jenny.
Jenny introduced this in the forum, said, have you guys seen Neil Gaiman's idea for All Hallows Read? What fun. I always go reverse trick-or-treating on Halloween, but I might as well give out books or scary stories instead of cookies. What book would you gift someone else? I was thinking House of Leaves if I thought the person could get through it.
So what is reverse trick-or-treating? Is that when you bring candy to people when you go trick-or-treating?
I guess. I don't really know.
Or... yeah, I'm trying to figure out what reverse trick-or-treating is.
But All Hallows Read, in Neil Gaiman's terms, is to give friends, family, scary books around Halloween time. So you don't have to buy, like, I'm sure there are people out there like, I don't have enough books to give to every kid that's going to stop by my house. But it's not like that. You just do it for people you know.
Oh, well, in case you're curious, Matt asks, I must be getting old, but what is reverse trick-or-treating? To which Alden replies, I'm imagining people leaving their house to hound children for candy.
So Jenny goes out beating up kids and taking their candy?
I
don't think that's what she does.
I could see her doing that.
You could.
I could see her capable of that. Yeah.
I don't think she would, though. She's got a better moral compass than that.
You think?
I think.
I don't know. Kids have all that candy.
It's very tempting.
What else are they gonna? It's not good for them. It's really,
maybe
you should just take it from them.
Maybe she's doing it in a good cause. Let me relieve you of this tooth rotting burden.
I'm just kidding, Jenny. I don't think you really beat up children and steal their candy.
I think you just steal their candy and don't beat them up.
They just cry a little bit. It's no big deal. They'll deal.
You'll thank me someday, kid, when you got a full set of teeth.
Should we talk about TV shows and movies and video games?
Well, definitely.
What is this? Fantastic Voyage is a doomed love story. What is this about?
So Blaster has a little note up that James Cameron, mm-hmm. before he makes his Avatar sequel, will be working with Sean Levy to remake, once again, Fantastic Voyage.
Sweet.
Which is based on the Isaac Asimov book. Cameron and Levy are about two-thirds of the way through the development phase, and Cameron's pretty excited about it. He told Deadline, I gave Levy my idea how this should be turned into a love story, and he's really run with it.
So they're turning it into, like, Titanic... in the body.
Yeah. What do you think Asimov would say about that?
What do you think Asimov would say about that? I don't know. I mean, if it fleshes out the story, fleshes. Sorry.
Because Fantastic Voyage, if there is somebody out there who doesn't know, is the story of a group of scientists who are shrunk down and then injected into a body and they roam around. There's more plot to it than that, but... the United States and Soviet Union have developed miniaturization, so that's kind of where this starts.
It's kind of like early nanotechnology.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. So that's interesting. I would see that movie, love story or not. And then George R. R. Martin's Wild Cards has been optioned for a movie, though it will be made by sci-fi. Sci-fi, in case you're wondering.
I want to point out, I said Isaac Asimov wrote the book. It was a novelization. The movie came first.
Oh, really?
Just, yeah, because people are going to write in and say, well, you implied that Asimov book.
You know,
Asimov,
I don't think I knew that, actually.
Asimov was approached to write the paperback based on the screenplay. So I am remiss in not giving the screenplay writer credit, but
well,
I
you know what?
Who it is.
I bet that Asimov would still have something to say about the love story, even if he wrote the novelization.
Jerome Bixby and Otto Clement.
Interesting. Well, thing that people were teasing us about last week or last time we did the show was that when we were talking about the science fiction database, we were looking for George R. R. Martin and we couldn't find him. We were like, oh, well, that's, you know, it is the science fiction database, not the fantasy database. But George R. R. Martin did work on Wild Cards, which is more of a sci-fi type of novel. And a lot of people pointed that out. And apparently that is now being optioned into a modest budgeted film project by Sci-Fi Movies, as I was mentioning, which is the newly established film arm of the Sci-Fi Channel. And it's all about an alien and virus that infects Earth in 1946. 90% of humans are unaffected. 9% are turned into mutated monsters and Kratons, known as Jokers, and 1% become superhumans, capable of amazing feats.
They have amazing feet.
Great feet. Great feet.
Optioned usually doesn't mean it will be made, mm-hmm. but with sci-fi movies, because it's made for TV, they generally don't bother optioning unless they have a pretty good intention of making it. And sci-fi, known for horrible movies, usually some kind of weird disaster movie involving nanobots, usually does a much better job when they turn books into movies.
Ooh, they should do the film adaptation or the new film adaptation of what we were just talking about, of a Fantastic Voyage.
Oh, yeah.
Nanobots.
Nanobots. Because everybody loves a nanobot. So I don't know. I think sci-fi could do an okay job on Wild Cards. I've never read Wild Cards, so I should probably read it.
It's an anthology series co-created by George R. R. Martin and Melinda Snodgrass.
Don't forget Melinda.
In 1987.
Yeah.
Cool. I would definitely watch that.
I would watch the crap out of that.
So are we going to talk about the book wrap-up? I mean, we've kind of said most of what there needs to be said about the book at this point.
Ready Player One, We are wrapping up. It is done.
It's done.
We've reached the end of the reading period. Mm-hmm. Most people finished it a long time ago. I finished it before we even started. We've talked about it a lot. In the end, Veronica Belmont, do you think this was a good book?
Yes. I thoroughly enjoyed this book.
Now, what do you say? Because there are a lot of detractors out there.
I know.
We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. Who say, you know, it's shallow or the story's too predictable. What do you say?
I think I enjoyed it because not only do I love 80s culture, which I do, I also felt that it was very relevant to a lot of the things that are going on in our current society. And working in the internet and being a gamer and being an MMO player, I felt that it was very relevant to my interests. And I felt that the jokes were tailor-made for someone like me. And maybe I'm shallow and maybe they were obvious, but I got a kick out of them. And I thought it was a fun read and I would recommend it to other people. And I would definitely watch the movie if it gets made.
Ready Player One was not a great work of literature. It wasn't meant to be a great work of literature. This is a love song to the 1980s and its popular culture. With fallout on both the 70s and the 90s and even into Firefly. But it's a love song to geekdom for a particular generation. I think if you are not in that generation, or if you have a very high level of expectation for what you want out of every single book to give you deeper meaning and insight into the human condition, you're going to be disappointed by Ready Player One. But if you want fun, and not just like mindless fun, like there's some thinking going on. But if you want fun and you are a lover of this same culture, whether you grew up in it or you just have been affected by it so much that you feel like you did, you're absolutely going to rave about this like I did. I didn't rave about the story because the story wasn't important. It wasn't to me, it wasn't about the story. It was about the fun of playing the game. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt like I said that accidentally, but I felt like I was playing a game when I actually read this book.
Django.
Sorry, trick-or-treaters at the door. So anyway, I felt like I was playing a game. I felt like I was having, it was like an extended, amazing cutscene of a book, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
I agree. So I'm curious to know what the final thoughts were from people out in the audience. So if you want to, I'll start a thread in Goodreads, and people can put their final thoughts in. Though I think that most people got a kick out of it. I think that the overwhelming vibe that I got from the discussions were that people enjoyed the callbacks to the 80s trivia and the callbacks to the games they played as kids and the music and the movies and just kind of living in that world and understanding how MMOs work and how a virtual reality thing could really kind of be the center point of your life. I think a lot of us related to that in a big way and related with the character of Wade and kind of understood a lot of the things he was going through. And so maybe that made it more palatable for us.
Yeah, and I think he made a very convincing virtual world to the point that some people felt like his real world paled in comparison, because he actually didn't put as much work into creating that post-apocalyptic economic collapse scenario as he did into Oasis. But you know what? I don't care. We're living in Oasis most of that time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's where Wade's focus is. That's where all the characters' focus are. So that makes total sense to me. Yeah. And also, I liked the idea of being able to imagine what a potential virtual reality world could look like in the future. And so this gave me some good brain candy for that, for being like, is this really how it's going to be, or is it going to be different? Is this too much? I enjoy that little mental exercise as well.
And I think it's interesting that both our books this time, you know, our main choice and the alternate book, Reamdi, deal with MMOs.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is going to become much bigger than it already is. You know, EverQuest and World of Warcraft and a few other MMOs out there, Legends, all are huge and have sustained amazingly large populations. But they're still small. We just hit 7 billion people today on the planet Earth. So it's still a small percentage. I think what's coming, and I don't know if it's Project Titan from Blizzard or some other indie developer out there or something else. We were talking about this on Forecast. I think it's coming that we're going to have an Oasis-like game that's going to sweep up the majority of people in one way or another, because it will be adaptable to styles of play and people will have meetings in there and it will start. I think it's entirely possible that we see a world created that is very similar to what Ernest Cline imagined.
Is that what Second Life should have been?
I think it's what Second Life wanted to be. Yeah.
Wanted to be.
I think that, and I don't know that Second Life couldn't still be there, but I have a feeling it'll be something that's built new from the ground up.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up. Is there anything else you want to add?
No. Great book. 5 stars from me.
Nice. Yeah, I wrote a little mini review on Goodreads as well, so check it out over there. And yeah, if you haven't read with us and you want something that's relatively quick to read but also fun, check out Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. All right. Well, we had a little contest on Goodreads to give away a Kindle.
Wow. Were you guys amazing? I was a little worried that people wouldn't want to give good pitches, or they just put up token stuff. Nobody did.
Mm-mm.
These pitches are great. If you just want, it's like reading 50 books, just going, or actually 111 books, going through the thread. I loved getting the notification every day saying, oh, someone else has posted, and there'd be this little novelization. Some of these I can't wait to read. I hope you write them and make them into books. But of course, we're randomly picking only one to receive the Kindle.
Mm-hmm. Should we read their synopsis for their potential NaNoWriMo book before
Absolutely.
We say who it is?
Uh-huh.
All right. The working title is Battle of Evermore. Synopsis. A journeyman musician who has played in local clubs and church bands for years has had his teenage rock and roll fantasy come true, or so he thinks. One night, while playing cover tunes at a bar, three aging but familiar musicians call him over to their table between sets and tell him an incredible story. Jason has gone missing, Robert Plant tells him after introducing Jimmy Page, John Paul Jones, and himself. We've been rehearsing for the upcoming world tour, but we can't play without a drummer. Something led us here tonight, and we know you are the one that can help us until we locate and rescue Jason to join us again. When he shows up for the first rehearsal at a warehouse the next day, he finds things are not quite what he expected. Catholic priests, Hebrew rabbis, Muslim imams, Hindu monks, and people dressed as druids and other pagan religious leaders stand in a circle around the band's practice area, with aromatic candles, incense, and other holy symbols held in their hands and inscribed on the ground. Exactly how and when did Jason disappear? The villain drummer asks. In response, Jimmy Page shakes his head and says, rock and roll. Then he wags a finger and taps a foot to indicate the tempo, and after a deep breath, the drummer starts the introductory cadence. Halfway through the first verse, time and space seem to dilate, and the drummer feels himself and his bandmates stretched and pulled through a whirling vortex of colors and spinning lights, and suddenly deposited inside the song. In his hands, he no longer holds drumsticks, but a quarterstaff, and he sees his bandmates armed with a battle axe, a sword, and a warhammer as things rush at them to attack. With the fill-in drummers, will the fill-in drummer survive this battle? Will he be able to help the band find their original drummer's missing son? Will anyone ever tell him what the hell is going on?
That's awesome. When I first saw this, I was like, okay, is this going to be some sort of fanfic Led Zeppelin dream sequence? But again, once he gets there and the religious people and he gets sucked into the song, I'm like, oh, this has possibilities. This mm-hmm. is cool. Mm-hmm. Nice job, Ice Lord.
Ice Lord is the winner, randomly selected. So congratulations, you win a Kindle. And so I guess you want to get in touch with us at theswordandlaser@gmail.com, and we'll figure everything out from there.
Sis Murphly, congratulations. So,
thanks to everyone who entered. There are some great NaNoWriMo story synopses in there, and I hope everyone's excited for tomorrow, because
tomorrow is the first day. Kick it off.
Are you doing it too?
I am. I have an idea of what I'm going to write. In the past, I've written publicly. When I did United Moon Colonies, I actually posted every day's effort as a blog post. Mm-hmm. And then last year when I did it, I just made the Google Doc public for whoever wanted to read along as I was writing. So I don't know if I'm going to do that again or not, but I might. I don't really mind if people see it. It's certainly very rough, but mine's going to be almost a young adult-ish book about solving mysteries and fighting crimes.
All right. I'm also doing it, and I have my title, and I don't think I'm going to be doing mine publicly. Just because...
That's fine. That would be...
I'm really nervous.
Yeah.
And I'm... you know, kind of embarrassed about starting for the first time, and I've never really written fiction before. So I'm excited. And Josh, who is one of my writing buddies, Josh Lawrence, has already emailed me being like, you're ready? You're ready to get started? And I'm like, you're a good writing buddy to have. I can already tell.
That's good. Well, let's do some new member hellos. Should we alternate on this one? Because we got a bunch of them this time.
We do. A lot of people joined. Yeah, let's alternate. You start.
Casey.
Amanda.
Michael.
Ian.
Eric.
Scotty.
Monkey Butler.
Michael.
Michael.
Alan.
Rich.
Rich. No, you. Oh, sorry. Alan. Rich. Ben.
Noel.
Jay.
Or Noel. NC Grimbo.
Robert.
Micah.
Philip.
Ba.
Andy.
Zach.
Steven.
Nathaniel.
Domenico.
Ken.
Joshua.
Sean.
Matthew.
Bill.
Kyle, a.k.a. Ket.
Nick.
Eric.
Erica.
Ed.
Quasar.
Richard.
John.
And Maxwell.
Welcome.
Bienvenidos, all Goodreads and our forums therein. Yeah, lot of new people, but we did skip a week last week because we were exhausted after BlizzCon.
We were.
Oh my God.
Especially the drive. Ooh.
The 7-hour drive. Yeah, that
not
was
doing
not,
that again.
Not fun.
It was an experiment.
Yeah, it was an experiment. That's
now we've
sure.
scientifically verified it's better to fly from San Francisco to LA than drive, even though it is cheaper to drive.
Well, I do have a little addendum today. So
do I.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I'll go first.
Yeah.
So for you gamers ladies. Out there, speaking of gamers and MMOs and whatnot, I am launching a new show with Brian Brushwood on the Twit Network. It's called
The Twit Network.
The Twit Network.
We're coworkers now.
I know. It's going to be a video game show. It's called Game On, and it's going to be starting in November, pretty soon.
Excellent. I'm so excited for that. I'm really looking forward to it. And there's going to be a LAN party afterwards and everything. So
yeah, we're gonna cover everything, all types of video games. I am finally free to talk about, you know, PC games and Xbox games and iPhone games and everything I play in the world of gaming. So I'm super excited. Brian's a great guy. We have a lot of fun whenever I go on NSFW or any other show he does, Scam School. And so I think we're going to make a great team, and the show's going to be awesome. And it'll be Sunday nights right after Twit.
Great lead-in.
Mm-hmm. Can't beat that for a time slot. Yeah, I'm excited.
My announcement is a new project that I'm doing with Justin Robert Young called FSL Tonight. It is a science fiction and fantasy sports league.
Really?
Yeah. So we have teams like the Mordor Crows, the Arrakis Barons, stuff like that. And you can follow along with the teams every week. It'll be a weekly podcast where we go through the trials and travails of the various teams and how they're doing and trades and quotes and special guest appearances from folks like Veronica Belmont.
I did know you were doing that show. It didn't sound very convincing when I said, really?
Yeah, I know. I knew you were doing the video game show.
I like how we co-opted the entire NSFW show crew for both of our new shows.
That's true. I didn't even think about that. You're right. We each drafted one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brian and Justin do the NSFW show, also on the Twit Network, which they just finished recording just now. And I have to tell you, I did Spider Belmont tonight. I don't know if you knew this.
A new spider has risen.
Tom in
the Spider Merritt place.
Mm-hmm. Tom in the past has played Spider Merritt and quizzed Leo. And so tonight I did Spider Belmont and also quizzed Leo. And it was very fun.
We do have, I did forget to give the URL, fsltonight.com. It'll redirect to sabrilliant.com/FSL, but don't worry about that. That's where you find it. And what we want is people who are just into the idea of like Luke Skywalker playing for a team. It's really not about sports. If you're not into sports, I think you might still enjoy it.
Yes, I listened to a couple episodes and it's very funny. Very funny, even if you don't like sports.
And that's how I know things are funny is Veronica tells me that was funny.
I say, that was funny. That was funny, Tom. Good job. That was funny. Yeah. All right. Well, that's the end of the show. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at theswordandlaser@gmail.com. That's theswordandlaser@gmail.com. You can check out our website, swordandlaser.com. All our discussions happen over at Goodreads. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, the phone number is 415-779-6735. Just call and record a voicemail and we will put it into the show.
Sweet.
Thank you guys so much for listening.
Talk to you next time.
See you later.